Welcome back to Holy Sisterhood, the podcast. My name is Brooklyn, and I am so glad that you are joining us. This is a special day because my sister-in-law is with us, and I'm so thankful. Katie, will you tell them just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I am Katie, as she said, and I am a therapist at Counseling and Play Therapy Center here in Gillette. I just graduated with my master's in May, and then I just had a baby also in May. So there's been just so some big much. Things, so much in the last few months. And I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and May was a good month.
It was a great
month. So you mostly work with children, and that's why I specifically wanted you on this episode, because I want to dive in to like our childhoods as adults, but also parenting children too, and how we can teach them healthy emotions. So, or a healthy way to deal with emotions. So first I want to start with, I want you to kind of speak to how we learned emotional regulation, or I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, no, that makes sense.
Emotions, yeah. When we were children, how we were taught what to do with them affects us as adults.
Yes, that's a great question. So co-regulation is what, when you have a baby, you like co-regulate your emotions. So if you're feeling anxious, it's same with a baby as it is with kids, that if you're feeling anxious or angry or something, those kids are feeding off of that. Even with infants, they're co-regulating. That's how they learn how to regulate their emotions, is because from an early age, they're like feeling like our big breasts. They're seeing like our facial expressions when they're infants. And then as they get older, then they're starting to model. They're starting to regulate with that, with what they see when we model, right? So if they're seeing a parent get super angry and then they storm off, or they do something and the parent is angry and they spank them or something, and they're seeing that anger is correlated with like, when I get mad, I hit something. So when we see toddlers who, when they do something wrong and mom and dad is mad, and I'm not saying any opinions on spanking by any means, but they're seeing that anger is correlated with a physical action. And so when they get mad, if somebody, like, for example, if they're in preschool and a kid takes their toy, they're saying like, okay, I have this feeling that's anger and I'm going to lash out and I'm going to hit that kid who just, and not to say this happens all the time, but if that's their main emotion, that's how they're not able to regulate in that, because they're not having a model.
They've been taught.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
So how early does that start? Like
even from day one. Yeah. From the womb.
Can't they feel it in the womb too?
Yes, completely.
Which is crazy. Cause I just was on monitor for baby and I was really stressed because I don't feel good. As you know, I have had kidney stones, but her heart rate was also high.
Yeah.
Because
which makes
of
sense.
That.
Yeah.
So literally you can see like that. Yes. We affect each other.
Completely. And like they say, when I do an intake with parents for therapy, we always ask like, how is your prenatal experience? How is your birth experience? Because even if you don't have, you're not sick your whole pregnancy, but for some reason you have something traumatic that happens at birth, that also is a trauma on the baby. Like trauma starts at birth. Like it is a traumatic experience for the mom and their body. It's a traumatic experience for a baby, because it's a huge thing. Like not only the mom's body is going through, but the baby, like even if everything goes smooth, it's still a trauma to their body. And it takes a little bit to recover from that too. Like everybody's like, babies cry and they're supposed to, but also they're recovering and they're coming to this world with lights and sounds. And even with a mom who her prenatal was a little bit stressful, it was safe and it was warm and everything was predictable. But then they get out in the world and there's lights and there's sounds that are so much more, just so much for them and super overstimulating. And that's why it's so important. This is kind of I just feel like, this is just coming to me too, like with postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression, like being aware of that and knowing the signs to look for, because then like during that co-regulating experience, if you're feeling that depression and anxiety, which obviously is, so everything is so much for the mom as they're bringing a baby into the world as well, but making sure that you have a good support system and you recognize those things so you can figure out how you're going to regulate through that.
Yeah.
So you can transfer that co-regulation to your baby that's also coming into this world trying to figure out what the heck do I do,
and
they're leaning on mom.
Skin to skin is probably really
important. Yeah, like the heart rate, the heartbeat, everything, and just that connection, obviously.
Warmth. No, that's super interesting. Do you think, so you've seen in your practice kids that come to you that had a traumatic birth or even prenatal care or something, you know, like we're in the hospital for mm-hmm. NICU, things yes. that are totally no one's fault.
Right.
And I mean, sometimes there is like neglect and abuse, but even things that are nobody's fault, that's just, and that was what was best for them.
Right.
They needed medical care or whatever, yeah. but you can see that playing out later.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And kids' first language is play. And so it's very interesting. And at first I was like, I don't know, but then I actually saw this play out. So
it's funny that we're saying play out, like it when it plays literally out is later.
Play. When yes. it's yes, play. Literally play. Yeah. Yeah, no pun intended. But there are these, so in play therapy, we're looking for metaphors and themes that kids are playing out in their play. And so one of them is they can be acting out things that happen in utero.
That is so crazy.
So wild. So I've seen like, for example, a kid who had the umbilical cord wrapped around their neck mm-hmm. in their play. And this was like years later. Obviously I'm seeing them when they're 5 and 6 and these mm-hmm. aren't conscious memories. Obviously we know that they can't obviously do that, but there'll be a lot of play like around their neck. It won't be like they're choking or anything, yeah. but they'll have like, they'll wrap like we have like chains and random things that are themes for things. And they'll like always have like that. And like, they're always touching and feeling their neck, or there'll be a lot of like hurt, like, oh, I just got shot in the neck, or oh, I just like, there's a lot of, cause trauma is stored in the body. Uh-huh. And so there's a huge play on their neck and the umbilical cord was. So that's like a play out of the trauma that happened in utero, which at first I was like, there's no way. And then after I've seen it happen, I was like, this is happening. And it's not just like, oh, one time that was, mm-hmm. they played it out, but it was like a repetition. And then, because kids have this innate want to heal. Like they don't know, they can't tell you like, oh, I had an umbilical cord wrapped around my neck, I need to heal from this trauma. Mm-hmm, right. It's not like that, but they have an innate want to heal. They don't like the way that their bodies feel. They know that it's uncomfortable and something's not right. And so they will repetitively do something to heal through that experience. And so when they're showing these, like this theme and play of like their neck is constantly hurting, then after like 6 or 7 sessions, not to say that's always the amount, mm-hmm. but after a significant set of sessions, the play around their neck will just completely stop. Like I won't see it again, because in that play, I'm saying like, oh my gosh, I'm saying metaphors. Like, I bet your neck is really like, that seemed like it really, really hurt, and mm-hmm. validating that experience, even though they can't connect it that it was in utero or right. during birth.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
But that is the healing part yes. is them seeing this same thing happen, kind mm-hmm. of like
yes,
in play. Yeah. They're obviously pretending, but then seeing a good outcome from it.
Right. Yep. And in a safe space.
Yeah.
Where they get to act that out, where, because it's very hard when you're just like, see your kids playing and they're putting things around their neck. Obviously it feels like a safety concern, yeah. but in our play space and therapy, they're allowed to do whatever mm-hmm. and act out whatever. So I'm obviously if they're choking themselves, I'm right. obviously stopping that.
But you're also, it's very one-on-one. You're yes. paying total attention to them.
Completely.
So it's different when you're at home and maybe you have like dinner or other kids or whatever. It's a lot harder to yeah. give that attention.
The space for
and
it.
And then yeah. also we like normal parents don't know what right. that means.
Yeah, no, like, and they shouldn't know. Yeah, you wouldn't know.
But that's really interesting. So I feel like children's therapy has become bigger in the last, I don't know, decade maybe
yeah,
or even
100%,
less. Like,
yeah.
It's not been very prominent for very long.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of us as adults now that never like healed things.
From childhood.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's kids today would heal if they were brought to counseling.
Completely. Yeah.
Because I don't think I knew anyone that went, any kids that went to counseling.
Yeah.
When
and
I was
they would
little.
Try to do, I feel like play therapy, obviously, too, is like this big thing within the last decade.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit older, but didn't start gaining traction uh-huh. to like not super recently, but kind of.
Yeah.
Especially in Wyoming, I feel like it takes a little longer for things yeah. to get
here.
Yeah.
We just have a little bit of a delay.
Yes, exactly. But it was like they try to do talk therapy, and yeah. with like the youngest kid that I've seen is 3. Like mm-hmm. I'm not sitting in a room with him asking him questions. He does not have that insight yet.
Yeah, he doesn't know.
But
yeah.
he can turn around and do it in play. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Dad just told me about this story that happened. And now he's playing it out in a safe space, and you got to work through that.
Yeah, that and is so cool.
It's amazing.
Such a gift. So as adults though, what are some like signs that we maybe have some unhealed traumas or unhealed things that happened when we were kids, or even, because I mean, you go all the way up to teenagers, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yep.
So at any time during that time, what would be some signs that we are not healed.
I was thinking about this a lot, and I feel like I've had a lot of conversations recently about this. Mm-hmm. And for, I'm going to talk specifically to people who have kids and then people who do not have kids. Okay. So for people who have kids, even with my own daughter, who's only 4 months old, I feel like God had revealed to me that I was like so busy and I wanted whatever. And now I have this stage 5 clinger baby who like likes contact naps, likes all these things. And so God was revealing to me some things that I needed to heal in my own life, that like the busyness and that went off. Okay.
No, you're good. No,
signs. Okay. signs that we haven't been healed from things. So I'm just realizing like how early it starts of, sometimes our kids can show us things that we haven't healed from. So for example, I was talking to a friend recently and, she just felt like she was having some control issues, and it stemmed from like later as we were talking about it was because her mom had such a tight rein on things that she didn't feel, and not in safe of the sense like physical or emotional abuse by any means, but parents do the best they can with what they have. But I think a lot of parents, the worst thing they can say is this is just the way that I am. Mm-hmm. And that does not leave any room for God to heal anything. That's just a little bit of pride, like, oh, God isn't big enough that he can mm-hmm. heal those things of that. Well, it's always been this way, so why would I change it?
Yeah.
But she recognized that she had some control issues that came from her growing up. And she was like, oh my gosh, like this is when this stemmed from. Cause I just asked her some more questions and it ended up coming from where it was childhood, where she was like, like in junior high, she would like have to make sure things were like really clean a certain way and mm-hmm. all these things had to be this way. And then it just,
and if it wasn't, then she felt unsafe. Yes, I've dealt with that too.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that makes sense. So yeah, like you're saying, I totally believe that God uses our children to refine us and our spouses. Mm-hmm. But we see so much through that process once we have kids, because we see all the ways that we're like, ooh, I was not really
right
doing what was best there or whatever. Do you think that... So we have talked about this, so I know you think this, but I want you to speak to how we can sometimes take out traumas on our children. Mm-hmm. Because you were saying when we were having a conversation that like if a teenager had a bunch of trauma happen mm-hmm. and then they grow up and have their own teenager eventually,
just that age,
they start getting angry at their teenager, even though it doesn't really make sense.
Completely. Yeah. So yes, I remember this conversation. So, and I just had a training last week that was literally about this where, you kind of get stuck in that age. So like if your kid is a teenager, but nothing super crazy has happened, but something happened to you at that age, just their age of them being a teenager is super triggering. So for example, this is just a hypothetical. So say that my mom went through something as a 15-year-old, like super traumatic, or not even has to be like big T trauma, but little T trauma where like her and her mom were just fighting a lot at that age. And then there was obviously just all the social things mm-hmm. and drama and distresses that happen at 15 or whatever age in those teen years happen. Then when they see these same things happening in their kid, like just even going to a junior high or a high school, and it kind of reverts them back to when they were there, then they are like way, like have this high sensitivity to their kid and just get super defensive about things because they're now seeing that they don't have things that are healed from that age, whether it was a friendship that was like it was their best friend and like that friendship broke up at that time, which is a huge, like that feels so traumatic when you're at that age.
But then later when you're an adult, you're like, oh, it's fine. We lived through it. It's all good.
Right.
But actually at the moment, your brain can't, that part of your brain can't tell time.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So that part of your brain, which is separate from the logical part of your brain, that's like, oh, well, I'm older now. I have friends.
Right.
That part of your brain is stuck there.
Yeah.
Completely. So the whole point of counseling then would be to retrain that part or rebuild neural pathways, right?
Yes. Yep. And there's really cool therapy that does that. But even in just talk therapy and being aware of this, is such a huge part of it, because then in those moments when you're still in the middle of parenting a teen, you have to take a step back and say, okay, is this a me issue or actually a them issue? Because obviously there's a time to teach your kids and all these things, but also there's a time where it's like the teen's just being a teen, like they're going to do things. But if you're reacting in a way that's like reactionary, not like listening to what they're actually saying, take a step back and saying, okay, God, what are you showing me in this moment? Not what am I supposed to, which again, there's times to teach, but what, like, reveal to me why I'm getting so upset about this, when really, when I take a step back and in the rational thinking part, that this isn't even a big deal. Like, why am I making this seem like this huge blow up? Mm-hmm. But it's from history that you as the parent, or you as a parent, as a child, didn't deal with. Mm-hmm. Now you're
I feel like I've noticed that a lot as my daughter, your niece, Quinn, mm-hmm. gets older, because there'll just be things that I just get so angry. And then I take a step back and I'm like, that did not match.
Right.
Like the reason, like, of not getting her shoes on or whatever, mm-hmm. and maybe like, let's go.
Right.
And so that is one way too. I think you can look and be like, okay, there's something there that I probably need to assess and bring God into that.
Completely.
And ask him what he's trying to show me, like you said.
Right. And he's so kind to, like, he's not going to let you let the lesson happen once and be like, oh, it slipped, it's fine. It's like, nope, I'm going to keep revealing this to you and keep, because there's a difference between a incident and a pattern. So if it's just an incident and you're like, I'm sorry. And then you're realizing that now there's a pattern of behavior within yourself that every time your kid is doing this, now it's showing you, okay, this isn't just an incident.
Yeah.
This is a pattern in my behavior. The kid is just being a kid.
Yeah.
And there's something in me that's stirring up and triggering something. That's when you really, he's like, have that discernment to, like, this isn't, I'm just not having a bad day. It's like, no, you've had a bad day like 6 days in a row. There's something else going on.
To the same exact
thing. Yes, to the exact same thing. Yes.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And a lot of that too, I know, can stem from like how our parents raised us, because Tara was on a couple of weeks ago and she talked about attachment styles and how we learn or how our emotions are regulated based on how our attachment was to our caregiver. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we're talking about can stem from childhood. That's like the point of this episode. Mm-hmm. But I want to be really careful, because I think that we could easily blame our parents, and that is not what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So when we are looking back, I think it's really important to be unbiased and just kind of looking like without blame. Like, okay, this is what happened and this is how it affected me. Just point blank like that. But I also want to give our parents grace, because I think that we've learned so much in the last, I don't even know, like, well, every year.
Literally.
It's just a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny that you say blame, because I literally wrote about this question of like not blaming our parents, because again, they did, like I said before, like, you do the best you can with what you have, but that doesn't mean that there isn't room for growth.
Right.
And yeah, I talk about grace, like, this is the first time, even like with me being a very new mom, this is the first time I'm parenting a 4 month old, 4 month and one day. And tomorrow it's going to be like, this is the first day I am parenting a 4 month old in 2 days. Mm-hmm. Like, so thinking about our parents, even as adults, like, this is the first time they're parenting, like my parents, this is the first time they're parenting a 33 year old with a 4 month old. Like they have, they do not have anything in their toolbox that has shown them besides what they had when they were growing up.
Yeah.
But I think that not only do we respect kids more, I feel like recently, like before it was like, kids aren't allowed to have bad days and kids aren't allowed to have these things. And now I think we're moving into a space where kids are allowed to have these things and they get to have a form of respect as well for those days. And I think that apologies are also are something that kind of came to mind when I was thinking about this too, that it's getting to be more normal that, like, as adults, kids deserve to be apologized to. Like, if we're having a bad day and we respond in a different way, which I feel like, even from growing up back then, and not to say my parents never did by any means, they for sure have apologized.
But like the norm.
But the norm being like, kids are to be seen, not heard, or whatever they say. And now I feel like that's changing to where we're letting them have a voice, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
But it definitely takes a change in the parenting aspect of how to break these generational things that, again, aren't bad necessarily, but to learn from.
We're just learning.
Yeah.
I was just thinking the other day, and I think I told Steven this, but I feel bad for Quinn sometimes. I might have told you this too. I feel bad for Quinn sometimes because we're just like winging it with her. Mm-hmm. Like, she's our guinea pig.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And we're like, okay, well, that didn't work. We won't do that again with any of our other children.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad, but I mean, I know that God placed her in our lives when
for a specific,
a specific reason. It's teaching her too, but.
Right. And you think even like, because there's so much psychology, which I don't know a lot about, but just birth order in general, like even before Quinn was born, like any firstborn, like God knew that they were being placed in this position and that he was going to prepare them
for
that. You
will be the guinea pig.
Yes, exactly. Like, I'm going to prep you in the womb to just be very, strong-willed and everything else that, and for them to grow up to have grace also later. Because back to that, like, blaming, there's also this place of, like, when you get to be an adult, like, getting to have those conversations with your parents as adults and coming from a place of asking to understand why they did the things that they did when that's, again, that's all they knew. But instead of blaming them, being like, man, we can be, have move into this friendship part of parenting where I can, like, ask you and, like, really understand and have these sweet grace and mercy moments for your mom and dad if you get to have those. And those are so redemptive, from your childhood, if there are things that you have to work through, which we always do. I remember Tara, speaking of her, she had said, I did a training with her a while ago, and she said, the one thing you're guaranteed in parenthood is you will mess them up in some aspect of their life. Like, they're going to go to therapy for you someday for something, even if you try to prevent it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. It makes me sad because I think that that it is so good that we are, like, looking back and realizing, okay, we do have traumas that we don't even remember. And some things can be healed and we can use our emotions to point us back to God in a healthy way through the healing. But I also think I've seen so many people who do that, like, look back at their past, but it makes them bitter.
Yeah.
And that breaks my heart.
And it is so sad because, and talk about, like, how many things God has probably revealed to heal in those. And I think,
and I know there's special cases. Like, I know that there's certain people that it's like, okay, actually this, it's not okay to be that way. But I'm talking about like, general.
And I think, I always think of this, like, who are we? Cause sometimes you have to take forgiveness without getting an apology, which I think is very hard. But you think about God, like, he forgives us for a multitude and lesson after lesson, and he's still forgiving us. So who are we? And again, like you said, there's complete, there are huge cases where it's like, oh my gosh, so much trauma and whatever. And that there probably needs to be an apology to be able to heal from those. But God is so much bigger in the forgiveness aspect. Like, who are we to, like, if our, in the generalized population where there isn't huge, like, emotional abuse and physical abuse and any of that happening, but that why not move on with forgiveness so you're not being held captive by that with the your parents
resentment.
And the resentment.
I definitely have done that, and I will say that I think that, well, actually I know that I could not have done it without God. It was a lot of prayer. So if you're, like, in a similar situation where you need to forgive up, invite God into it and pray a lot and be patient. And it really does, like, he does help you over time to have forgiveness in your heart, even if they never apologize. So if we forgive up, I think it helps us in a weird way to receive forgiveness down. Rebecca Lyons talked about this at a conference that I went to. But I think what she means is I forgave my parents because they weren't perfect and they did things just like we all do. But now that I have my own kids and I'm constantly like, okay, what are you going to tell somebody in the therapist's office about what I just said to you? Like, is this going to be the thing? But it's nice to know that there is that forgiveness that you can receive because we will never be perfect, like you said. And actually, we don't want that. Like,
no,
we would not learn what we need to learn. And our kids would not learn what they need to learn if we were Jesus.
And it puts, so they don't have a dependence. Cause obviously, like, when they're little, we're training them up, whatever, but there has to be a point where they do separate from us. And we don't want to be the sole providers of their peace, their comfort, their everything. Like, God puts limits on us as parents because he is limitless. And we need those moments for us to recognize that we have to have limits, because if we had everything, our kids would never, why would they need God?
Like,
if
we did everything. Just like us. Like, we need God because we become desperate for him in times because we don't have what we need.
And if we put on this perfect persona to our kids that we're, like, all these things, and they're constantly trying to live up to this perfect thing, like, they're going to grow up with so much guilt and shame because anything that they have that isn't lining up with this perfect image, they are not going to know what to do with that.
It's unrealistic. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I do often think about that, and I often apologize to Quinn. So what are some things that you think that we could do as parents, like practical things off the top of your head to kind of teach our kids, because I don't want to teach Quinn. We're kind of in this space right now with her age where sometimes her emotions are really big. And I am like, those are not the truth, though. Mm-hmm. Yes, you feel them, but they are not the truth. And we can speak truth to them.
Yeah.
But also not going to the side of like not feeling them at all. And right. like, no, do not cry about that. Go to yeah. your room. Mm-hmm. So where's the like middle? Like, where do we want to end up?
That's a great question. I am reading this book, Lisa Turker's new one called I Want to Trust You, But I Don't. And she, I had to write this down. What we don't work out, we act out. And so when the emotion comes in and you're, so if you have a parent that's like telling them like suppress it, the suppression can only last for so long. Like it's just going to keep bubbling up. And especially with kids, like if they're, if, and especially if they're at an age where they now understand how to numb and they are just suppressing it, and they're like, well, they don't have the time for me to be able to express how I feel. I'm going to shove it. And then it is going to play out sometime in their life. Mm-hmm. No, well, it won't take very long actually, because it will explode in something and probably not at the person that they even meant for it to, because they need a way for it to go. So moving forward, first of all, like you said about apologies, I think there's so much power in apologies as parents. Even now, like my daughter just waking up like every hour and a half to 2 hours. And I like at like 2 a.m. I'm getting a little bit frustrated. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, honey, I am so sorry. Like even now as an infant, like she doesn't know what's happening, but I'm like, I can feel myself getting frustrated and just starting now like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And so I think modeling that like sincere apology as like parents, we are going to mess up, and your kids being able to see like, okay, they messed up, but then they genuinely had an action that changed after the apology where they did get a little tenderer. Their voice didn't raise their voice the next time they're seeing that change. Mm-hmm. That is something that kids can, that it's not going to seem in the moment they're going to take, and it'll take them a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. But then when they apologize for something, they have seen the genuine, sincere apology and they're able to give it, which I think is just a huge lesson that kids, because all the time, like if a kid does something, they're like, tell them that you're sorry.
And it's like, but I'm not.
But they're not. They don't feel it. So if they're seeing it in their parent where it's like, oh my gosh, now my mom has said sorry and I genuinely feel it, I feel like that's a good applicable place to start. And then emotions wise, again, being like, with the apology, saying like, gosh, I was getting really frustrated because of this. So putting words to the emotion where it's like sometimes, or be like, I don't know what I'm feeling, but there's just like a lot going on. And kids are really good about having like visuals or something like that. So my supervisor, Rose, who's amazing, she always gives this image of like a logs in a fire. So like the logs are these things that have been like bubbling up. So like for a kid, they can say, well, I was this friend at school was really, really mean to me today. And so that was a log. And so telling them like, we want to deal with each log as it comes, not building it up. So then there's this big fire explosion. Like, okay, let's deal with this log today. So this friend wasn't very nice to you. Tell me like, how did that make your body feel?
Just kind of work through it with them.
Yes. Yep.
Like hear the emotion, validate the emotion, but then also point back to God. Like, you might feel angry and God knows what that feels like. Yeah. Bring it to him. Or you might be sad and God wants to comfort you.
Yeah.
Or teaching them, I guess, young, that whatever we're feeling, we can turn back to God with that.
Yeah. And pray in the moment. Like even, and obviously prayer too. So the apology and that, and then be like, hey, can I pray about this with you? Like, let's pray for that friend tomorrow. Maybe they had a really bad morning and having a little bit of compassion, not excusing them being excusing them being mean to you, but let's pray for that person instead of lash back out in anger.
Yeah. So it really is just modeling. Mm-hmm. So what would you say would be like the too far to the other side of, okay, at some point we have to know we can't be selfish. Like, and at some point we have to know that we are supposed to glorify God, and like certain things, is it just discernment? Like certain things just, shouldn't, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Cause it's not that we shouldn't feel it. Oh, I guess you could, I told Quinn this the other day, you can be mad at your brother, but you can still be kind.
Yes.
Like, so yes, you can feel the emotion, but you don't have to say it.
Yeah. And there doesn't need to be collateral damage with the emotion. Like if you're being valid, if they're being validated, but if they're not being validated, that's when they're going to keep doing things that like finally until they get that validation. Mm-hmm. So if they're saying, like, so for example, if you're saying, you're not even angry. That's not even something to be mad about or something. Mm-hmm. When they so fully feel that they're mad, then they're like, okay, well, I'm going to do something else that's going to get this mm-hmm. same reaction out of you. So I can finally be like, I'm mad and I'm feeling mad. I need to know that that's okay, mm-hmm. but not okay. Obviously, if I'm hurting a sibling yeah. or hurting a friend or destroying like a toy or something like that, obviously. But yeah, kids need validation because where else are they getting it? If they don't know that that's what's true or what they're feeling, mm-hmm. where else are they getting it from?
Yeah, no, that does make sense. And I think that there was this like independence kick probably like when we were kids where mm-hmm. parents, like their main goal was to make us independent.
Yeah.
Functioning members of society, which mm-hmm. makes sense. And that does sound good.
Yes.
But the more I've thought about it the last 3 years, probably, I'm like, but I'm dependent on God. So yeah. why would I not teach Quinn that you can be dependent?
Completely. Yeah. There's like this toxic independency.
Yeah.
I feel like almost, and that's a lot of pride because we're saying that like, we can handle this ourselves. And God's like, no, I'm your provider. I'm your comforter. I'm your protector. Right. I'm all these things. Bring this to me and be dependent on me and I'll give you what you need. Not this pride coming in and be like, or I feel like with that independence comes like you feel like a burden. Yeah. So like when you do grow up being told that like independence and all these things, then you get to the point where like, you don't know how to ask for help. Yeah. You don't know how to come to somebody when you need comfort. Mm-hmm. And so how are you supposed to come? Then you feel the same way about yeah. God. You're like, I'm a burden. Like these for problems sure. are too little. It's like, no, every single problem that you have, he wants to hear everything.
Yeah.
Like he counted the hairs on your head. He wants to know that you got upset that your latte had
yeah.
real milk instead of oat milk or something. Yeah, you know what right. I mean? Like and he cares yeah. about every detail.
Exactly. And like it says in the Bible, like those who mourn will be comforted. So if your child is mourning the balloon popping or whatever, mm-hmm. it's not a big deal. And most of the time they do get over it in like yeah. 30 minutes, but showing them, okay, but you can come to me and I will show you comfort.
Completely.
We can go to God. You can go to God and he will show you comfort.
Exactly.
So just modeling mm-hmm. that. What would you say if somebody's listening or even just me on a regular day when we're messing up and we're not like say Quinn got mad about her balloon popping and I was like, you're fine. Stop. Like,
yeah.
where do we, and especially I think speak to the people that have been doing it for a long time. There's still like room to change.
Oh, 100%. And room for grace. Like
yeah.
in these moments that God's not going to come to you and make you feel shame and guilt over things. That's not from him. There is a point where like guilt comes from a conviction space, right. not a condemning space. Mm-hmm. But in those moments, again, like we were talking about earlier, assess like why this is coming up or why that you continue to have the same action towards yeah. whatever as a parent, or even like in your job, with your friendships, with your spouse, this can be anything.
Yeah.
Where that emotion, do some investigating of like, and get curious about why. And so you're not just saying like, well, I'm just having a bad day or whatever. And so yeah, getting back to like finding the deep rooted part of the why, which is very vulnerable for a lot of people that you don't want to go that deep because yeah. what else is that going to expose? Mm-hmm. But then that's when you bring God into all of that. And like, as things are getting exposed, then he's going to comfort you. Then he's going to be right. your counselor. Then he's going to bring all these attributes that are going to heal as the deep stuff comes up. And it will start to feel not as scary because he gets to be with you through it. He's not going to say it's going to pass. Like we know. Right.
We're going to walk
yeah,
through
we're
it.
We're going to walk through it with him.
No, that makes sense. And just like we can go back and look at our past unbiased, and then we can come back to the future mm-hmm. or the present. I mean, yeah. for the future, we can rebuild those neural pathways.
Completely.
And I think, and this might be wrong and you might know this, they can grow at like 1 millimeter a day or something like that.
That sounds like a great number. I have no idea.
I don't know either, actually. Like, don't
I don't
quote
know.
Us.
Yeah.
I'm going to just say it though, because it makes me sound smart.
Yeah,
it
does
but
sound
I
very
do
smart.
Know that they do grow back and it is pretty slow, mm-hmm. but that is so encouraging. And I'm so grateful that God made our brains that way
completely.
Because he knew we yeah. would need it. So just like we can do that, our kids can do that too.
Yeah.
So,
and kids are so like, they're talk about neuroplasticity and all those things. Like they're so moldable.
They're probably growing like 2 millimeters
oh,
a day.
Oh, for sure. And there's so much more room for the growth and things where you can help them do yeah. those things. Like they are not too far gone at yeah. all. Like they have a new day.
Even
every day
adult
too.
Children.
Yes.
Like if you're listening and you're like, wow, I did not do what I wanted or meant to when my kids were younger, there's still room and grace for reconciliation.
Completely. Yeah.
Yes. Well, do you have anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. Okay. I think this is really good. And yeah, just along with God giving grace and mercy, I would just say like people who are parents and not parents, like just giving yourself and receiving that grace and mercy from God in those moments so you can continue to move forward with that. And that he's not being mean when he's revealing things. He loves us too much to leave us where we're at.
Yeah.
And as parents, especially, like he loves us too much to leave us where we're at as parents. Like we want to be able to grow and we can heal through our kids, but they shouldn't be the sole.
That shouldn't be their responsibility.
No, exactly.
Right. Yep. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm very grateful for your wisdom and all the things that you shared.
Thank you so much.